Quintessette said, "Please sit down. I'm afraid you'll find these chairs to be lifeless ones, but I, for one, don't want my chairs to hug me. It's all the fashion for chairs to hug you nowadays, but I prefer a hug to mean something, eh?" Trevise smiled and said, "Who would not? Your name, Eskew, seems to be of the Rim Worlds and not Seychellian. I apologize if the remark is impertinent." "I don't mind. My family traces back, in part, to Ascone. 5 generations back, my great-great-grandparents left Ascone when Foundation domination grew too heavy." Pellaret said, "And we are Foundationers. Our apologies." Quintessence waved his hand genially. "I don't hold a grudge across a stretch of 5 generations. Not that such things haven't been done, more's the pity. Would you like to have something to eat, to drink? Would you like music in the background?" "If you don't mind," said Pellaret, "I'd be willing to get right to business if Seychellian ways would permit." "Seychellian ways are not a barrier to that, I assure you. You have no idea how remarkable this is, Dr. Pellaret. It was only about 2 weeks ago that I came across your article on origin myths in the Archaeological Review, and it struck me as a remarkable synthesis, all too brief." Pellaret flushed with pleasure. "How delighted I am that you have read it. I had to condense it, of course, since the review would not print a full study. I have been planning to do a treatise on the subject." "I wish you would. In any case, as soon as I had read it, I had this desire to see you. I even had the notion of visiting Terminus in order to do so, though that would have been hard to arrange."
"Why so?" asked Trevise. Quintessence looked embarrassed.
"I'm sorry to say that Seychelles is not eager to join the Foundation Federation, and rather discourages any social communication with the Foundation. We've a tradition of neutralism, you see. Even the mule didn't bother us, except to extort from us a specific statement of neutrality. For that reason, any application for permission to visit Foundation territory generally, and particularly Terminus, is viewed with suspicion, although a scholar such as myself, intent on academic business, would probably obtain his passport in the end. But none of that was necessary. You have come to me. I can scarcely believe it. I ask myself, why? Have you heard of me, as I have heard of you?"
Pellaret said,
"I know your work, Eskew, and in my records I have abstracts of your papers. It is why I have come to you. I am exploring both the matter of Earth, which is the reputed planet of origin of the human species, and the early period of the exploration and settlement of the galaxy. In particular, I have come here to inquire as to the founding of Seychelles."
"From your paper," said Quintessence, "I presume you are interested in myths and legends."
"Even more in history, actual facts, if such exist. Myths and legends otherwise."
Quintessence rose and walked rapidly back and forth the length of his office, paused to stare at Pellaret, then walked again. Trevise said impatiently,
"Well, sir?"
Quintessence said, "Odd, really odd. It was only yesterday."
Pellaret said, "What was only yesterday?"
Quintessence said, "I told you, Dr. Pellaret, may I call you J.P., by the way? I find using a full-length name rather unnatural."
"Please do."
"I told you, J.P., that I had admired your paper, and that I had wanted to see you. The reason I wanted to see you was that you clearly had an extensive collection of legends concerning the beginnings of the worlds, and yet didn't have ours. In other words, I wanted to see you in order to tell you precisely what you have come to see me to find out."
"What is this to do with yesterday, Eskew?" asked Trevise.
"We have legends. A legend, an important one to our society, for it has become our central mystery."
"Mystery?" said Trevise.
"I don't mean a puzzle or anything of that sort. That, I believe, would be the usual meaning of the word in galactic standard. There's a specialized meaning here. It means something secret, something only certain adepts know the full meaning of, something not to be spoken of to outsiders, and yesterday was the day."
"The day of what, Eskew?" asked Trevise, slightly exaggerating his air of patience.
"Yesterday was the day of flight."
"Ah," said Trevise, "a day of meditation and quiet when everyone is supposed to remain at home."
"Something like that, in theory. Except that in the larger cities, the more sophisticated regions, there is little observance in the older fashion. But you know about it, I see."
Pellaret, who had grown uneasy at Trevise's annoyed tone, put in hastily,
"We heard a little of it, having arrived yesterday."
"Of all days," said Trevise sarcastically.
"See here, Eskew. As I said, I'm not an academic, but I have a question. You said you were speaking of a central mystery, meaning it was not to be spoken of to outsiders. Why, then, are you speaking of it to us? We are outsiders."
"So you are. But I'm not an observer of the day, and the depth of my superstition in this matter is slight at best. J.P.'s paper, however, reinforced a feeling I have had for a long time. A myth or legend is simply not made up out of a vacuum. Nothing is or can be. Somehow, there is a kernel of truth behind it, however distorted that might be, and I would like the truth behind our legend of the day of flight.
Tavi said, "Is it safe to talk about it?"
Quintessence shrugged. "Not entirely, I suppose. The conservative elements among our population would be horrified. However, they don't control the government, and haven't for a century. The secularists are strong, and would be stronger still if the conservatives didn't take advantage of our, if you'll excuse me, anti-foundation bias. Then, too, since I am discussing the matter out of my scholarly interest in ancient history, the League of Academicians will support me strongly in case of need."
"In that case," said Pellerat, "would you tell us about your central mystery, SQ?"
"Yes, but let me make sure we won't be interrupted, or, for that matter, overheard. Even if one must stare the bull in the face, one needn't slap its muzzle, as the saying goes."
He flicked a pattern on the workface of an instrument on his desk and said, "We are incommunicado now."
"Are you sure you're not bugged?" said Reese.
"Bugged?"
"Tapped, eavesdropped. Subjected to a device that will have you under observation, visual or auditory or both."
Quintessence looked shocked.
"Not here on Seychelles."
Treves shrugged. "If you say so."
"Please go on, SQ," said Pellerat. Quintessence pursed his lips, leaned back in his chair, which gave slightly under the pressure, and put the tips of his fingers together. He seemed to be speculating as to just how to begin. He said, "Do you know what a robot is?"
"A robot?" said Pellerat.
"No."
Quintessence looked in the direction of Treves, who shook his head slowly.
"You know what a computer is, however."
"Of course," said Treves impatiently.
"Well then, a mobile computerized tool..."
"Is a mobile computerized tool." Treves was still impatient. "There are endless varieties, and I don't know of any generalized term for it except mobile computerized tool."
"That looks exactly like a human being is a robot,"
SQ completed his definition with equanimity.
"The distinction of a robot is that it is humaniform."
"Why humaniform?" asked Pellerat in honest amazement.
"I'm not sure. It's a remarkably inefficient form for a tool, I grant you, but I'm just repeating the legend. Robot is an old word from no recognizable language, though our scholars say it bears the connotation of work."
"I can't think of any word," said Treves skeptically, "that sounds even vaguely like robot and that has any connection with work."
"Nothing in galactic, certainly," said Quintessence, "but that's what they say."
Pellerat said, "It may have been reversed etymology. These objects were used for work, and so the word was said to mean work. In any case, why do you tell us this?"
"Because it is a firmly fixed tradition here on Seychelles that when Earth was a single world and the galaxy lay all uninhabited before it, robots were invented and devised. There were then two sorts of human beings, natural and invented, flesh and metal, biological and mechanical, complex and simple."
Quintessence came to a halt and said with a rueful laugh,
"I'm sorry. It is impossible to talk about robots without quoting from the Book of Flight. The people of Earth devised robots, and I need say no more. That's plain enough."
"And why did they devise robots?" asked Treves.
Quintessence shrugged. "Who can tell at this distance in time? Perhaps they were few in numbers and needed help, particularly in the great task of exploring and populating the galaxy."
Treves said, "That's a reasonable suggestion. Once the galaxy was colonized, the robots would no longer be needed. Certainly there are no humanoid mobile computerized tools in the galaxy today."
"In any case," said Quintessence, "the story is as follows, if I may vastly simplify and leave out many poetic ornamentations which, frankly, I don't accept, though the general population does or pretends to. Around Earth, there grew up colony worlds circling neighboring stars, and these colony worlds were far richer in robots than was Earth itself. There was more use for robots on raw, new worlds. Earth, in fact, retreated, wished no more robots, and rebelled against them."
"What happened?" asked Pellerat.
"The outer worlds were the stronger. With the help of their robots, the children defeated and controlled Earth, the mother. Pardon me, but I can't help slipping into quotation. But there were those from Earth who fled their world with better ships and stronger modes of hyperspatial travel. They fled to far distant stars and worlds, far beyond the closer worlds earlier colonized. New colonies were founded, without robots, in which human beings could live freely. Those were the times of flight, so-called, and the day upon which the first Earthman reached the Seychelles sector, this very planet, in fact, is the day of flight, celebrated annually for many thousands of years. Pellerat said, "My dear chap, what you are saying, then, is that Seychelles was founded directly from Earth." Quintessence thought and hesitated for a moment. Then he said, "That is the official belief." "Obviously," said Trevise, "you don't accept it." "It seems to me," Quintessence began, and then burst out, "Oh, great stars and small planets, I don't. It is entirely too unlikely. But it's official dogma, and however secularized the government has become, lip service to that at least is essential. Still, to the point. In your article, J.P., there is no indication that you're aware of this story, of robots and of two waves of colonization, a lesser one with robots and a greater one without." "I certainly was not," said Pellerat. "I hear it now for the first time, and, my dear S.Q., I am eternally grateful to you for making this known to me. I am astonished that no hint of this has appeared in any of the writings." "It shows," said Quintessence, "how effective our social system is. It's our Seychellian secret, our great mystery."
"Perhaps," said Trevise dryly.
"Yet the second wave of colonization, the robotless wave, must have moved out in all directions. Why is it only on Seychelles that this great secret exists?"
Quintessence said,
"It may exist elsewhere and be just a secret. Our own conservatives believe that only Seychelles was settled from Earth, and that all the rest of the galaxy was settled from Seychelles. That, of course, is probably nonsense."
Pellerat said,
"These subsidiary puzzles can be worked out in time. Now that I have the starting point, I can seek out similar information on other worlds. What counts is that I have discovered the question to ask, and a good question is, of course, the key by which infinite answers can be educed. How fortunate that I..."
Trevise said, "Yes, Genov. But the good S.Q. has not told us the whole story, surely. What happened to the older colonies and their robots, do your traditions say?"
"Not in detail, but in essence. Human and humanoid cannot live together, apparently. The worlds with robots died. They were not viable."
"And Earth?"
"Humans left it and settled here and, presumably, though the conservatives would disagree, on other planets as well."
"Surely not every human being left Earth. The planet was not deserted."
"Presumably not. I don't know."
Trevise said abruptly,
"Was it left radioactive?"
Quintessence looked astonished.
"Radioactive?"
"That's what I'm asking."
"Not to my knowledge. I never heard of such a thing."
Trevise put a knuckle to his teeth and considered. Finally he said,
"S.Q., it's getting late, and we have trespassed sufficiently on your time, perhaps."
Pellerat made a motion as though he were about to protest, but Trevise's hand was on the other's knee and his grip tightened, so Pellerat, looking disturbed, subsided.
Quintessence said, "I was delighted to be of use."
"You have been, and if there's anything we can do in exchange, name it." Quintessence laughed gently.
"If the good J.P. will be so kind as to refrain from mentioning my name in connection with any writing he does on our mystery, that will be sufficient repayment."
Pellerat said eagerly,
"You would be able to get the credit you deserve, and perhaps be more appreciated, if you were allowed to visit Terminus and even perhaps remain there as a visiting scholar at our university for an extended period. We might arrange that. Seychelles might not like the Federation, but they might not like refusing a direct request that you be allowed to come to Terminus to attend, let us say, a colloquium on some aspect of ancient history."
The Seychellian half rose.
"Are you saying you can pull strings to arrange that?"
Trevise said, "Why, I hadn't thought of it, but J.P. is perfectly right. That would be feasible if we tried. And, of course, the more grateful you make us, the harder we will try."
Quintessence paused, then frowned. "What do you mean, sir?"
"All you have to do is tell us about Gaia, S.Q.," said Trevise. And all the light in Quintessence's face died. 53. Quintessence looked down at his desk. His hand stroked absent-mindedly at his short, tightly curled hair. Then he looked at Trevise and pursed his lips tightly. It was as though he were determined not to speak. Trevise lifted his eyebrows and waited, and finally Quintessence said in a strangled sort of way,
"It is getting indeed late, quite glimmering."
Until then he had spoken in good Galactic, but now his words took on a strange shape, as though the Seychellian mode of speech were pushing past his classical education. "Glimmering, S.Q.?"
"It is nearly full night."
Trevise nodded. "I am thoughtless, and I am hungry, too. Could you please join us for an evening meal, S.Q., at our expense?
We could then perhaps continue our discussion about Gaia. Quintessence rose heavily to his feet. He was taller than either of the two men from Terminus, but he was older and pudgier, and his height did not lend him the appearance of strength. He seemed more weary than when they had arrived. He blinked at them and said, "I forget my hospitality. You are outworlders, and it would not be fitting that you entertain me. Come to my home. It is on campus, and not far, and if you wish to carry on a conversation, I can do so in a more relaxed manner there than here. My only regret," he seemed a little uneasy, "is that I can offer you only a limited meal. My wife and I are vegetarians, and if you are meat-eating, I can only express my apologies and regrets." Trevise said, "J.P. and I will be quite content to forego our carnivorous natures for one meal. Your conversation will more than make up for it, I hope." "I can promise you an interesting meal, whatever the conversation," said Quintessence, "if your taste should run to our Seychellian spices. My wife and I have made a rare study of such things." "I look forward to any exoticism you choose to supply, S.Q.," said Trevise coolly, though Pellerat looked a little nervous at the prospect. Quintessence led the way. The three left the room and walked down an apparently endless corridor, with the Seychellian greeting students and colleagues now and then, but making no attempt to introduce his companions. Trevise was uneasily aware that others stared curiously at his sash, which happened to be one of his gray ones. A subdued color was not something that was de rigueur in campus clothing, apparently. Finally, they stepped through the door and out into the open. It was indeed dark and a little cool, with trees bulking in the distance and a rather rank stand of grass on either side of the walkway. Pellerat came to a halt, with his back to the glimmer of lights that came from the building they had just left and from the glows that lined the walks of the campus. He looked straight upward. "Beautiful," he said. "There is a famous phrase in a verse by one of our better poets that speaks of the speckle shine of Seychelles' soaring sky." Trevise gazed appreciatively and said in a low voice, "We are from Terminus, S.Q., and my friend at least has seen no other skies. On Terminus, we see only the smooth, dim fog of the galaxy and a few barely visible stars. You would appreciate your own sky even more had you lived with ours." Quintessence said gravely, "We appreciate it to the full, I assure you. It's not so much that we are in an uncrowded area of the galaxy, but that the distribution of stars is remarkably even. I don't think that you will find anywhere in the galaxy first magnitude stars so generally distributed, and yet not too many either. I have seen the skies of worlds that are inside the outer reaches of a globular cluster, and there you will see too many bright stars. It spoils the darkness of the night sky and reduces the splendor considerably."
"I quite agree with that," said Trevise.
"Now I wonder," said Quintessence, "if you see that almost regular pentagon of almost equally bright stars, the Five Sisters, we call them. It's in that direction, just above the line of trees. Do you see it?"
"I see it," said Trevise. "Very attractive."
"Yes," said Quintessence. "It's supposed to symbolize success in love, and there's no love letter that doesn't end in a pentagon of dots to indicate a desire to make love. Each of the five stars stands for a different stage in the process, and there are famous poems which have vied with each other in making each stage as explicitly erotic as possible. In my younger days, I attempted versifying on the subject myself, and I wouldn't have thought that the time would come when I would grow so indifferent to the Five Sisters, though I suppose it's the common fate. Do you see the dim star just about in the center of the Five Sisters?"
"Yes."
"That," said Quintessence, "is supposed to represent unrequited love. There is a legend that the star was once as bright as the rest, but faded with grief."
And he walked on rapidly. 54. The dinner, Trevise had been forced to admit to himself, was delightful. There was endless variety, and the spicing and dressing were subtle but effective. Trevise said, "All these vegetables, which have been a pleasure to eat, by the way, are part of the galactic dietary, are they not, S.Q.?"
"Yes, of course."
"I presume, though, that there are indigenous forms of life, too."
"Of course. Seychelles Planet was an oxygen world when the first settlers arrived, so it had to be life-bearing, and we have preserved some of the indigenous life, you may be sure. We have quite extensive natural parks in which both the flora and the fauna of old Seychelles survive."
Pellerat said sadly,
"There you are in advance of us, S.Q. There was little land life on Terminus when human beings arrived,
and I'm afraid that for a long time no concerted effort was made to preserve the sea life, which had produced the oxygen that made Terminus habitable. Terminus has an ecology now that is purely galactic in nature.
Seychelles, said Quintessence with a smile of modest pride, has a long and steady record of life-valuing.
And Trevise chose that moment to say, When we left your office, SQ, I believe it was your intention to feed us dinner and then tell us about Gaia.
Quintessence's wife, a friendly woman, plump and quite dark, who had said little during the meal, looked up in astonishment, rose, and left the room without a word.
My wife, said Quintessence uneasily, is quite a conservative, I'm afraid, and is a bit uneasy at the mention of the world. Please excuse her, but why do you ask about it?
Because it is important for JP's work, I'm afraid.
But why do you ask it of me? We were discussing Earth, robots, the founding of Seychelles. What has all this to do with what you ask?
Perhaps nothing. And yet there are so many oddnesses about the matter. Why is your wife uneasy at the mention of Gaia? Why are you uneasy?
Some talk of it easily enough. We have been told only today that Gaia is Earth itself, and that it has disappeared into hyperspace because of the evil done by human beings.
A look of pain crossed Quintessence's face.
Who told you that gibberish?
Someone I met here at the university.
That's just superstition.
Then it's not part of the central dogma of your legends concerning the flight?
No, of course not. It's just a fable that arose among the ordinary, uneducated people.
Are you sure? Asked Trevise coldly.
Quintessence sat back in his chair and stared at the remnant of the meal before him. Come into the living room, he said. My wife will not allow this room to be cleared and set to rights while we are here and discussing this.
Are you sure it's just a fable? Repeated Trevise once they had seated themselves in another room before a window that bellied upward and inward to give a clear view of Seychelles' remarkable night sky. The lights within the room glimmered down to avoid competition, and Quintessence's dark countenance melted into the shadow.
Quintessence said, Aren't you sure? Do you think that any world can dissolve into hyperspace? You must understand that the average person has only the vaguest notion of what hyperspace is.
The truth is, said Trevise, that I myself have only the vaguest notion of what hyperspace is, and I've been through it hundreds of times.
Let me speak realities, then. I assure you that Earth, wherever it is not located within the borders of the Seychelles Union, and that the world you mentioned is not Earth.
But even if you don't know where Earth is, SQ, you ought to know where the world I mentioned is. It is certainly within the borders of the Seychelles Union. We know that much, eh, Pellerat?
Pellerat, who had been listening stolidly, started at being suddenly addressed and said, If it comes to that, Golan, I know where it is.
Trevise turned to look at him.
Since when, Genoff?
Since earlier this evening, my dear Golan. You showed us the five sisters, SQ, on our way from your office to your house. You pointed out a dim star at the center of the Pentagon. I'm positive that's Gaia.
Quintessence hesitated. His face, hidden in the dimness, was beyond any chance of interpretation.
Finally he said, Well, that's what our astronomers tell us, privately. It is a planet that circles that star.
Trevise gazed contemplatively at Pellerat, but the expression on the professor's face was unreadable. Trevise turned to Quintessence.
Then tell us about that star. Do you have its coordinates?
I? No. He was almost violent in his denial. I have no stellar coordinates here. You can get it from our astronomy department, though I imagine not without trouble. No travel to that star is permitted.
Why not? It's within your territory, isn't it?
Spatiographically, yes. Politically, no.
Trevise waited for something more to be said. When that didn't come, he rose.
Professor Quintessence, he said formally, I am not a policeman, soldier, diplomat, or thug. I am not here to force information out of you. Instead, I shall, against my will, go to our ambassador. Surely you must understand that it is not I, for my own personal interest, that request this information. This is Foundation business, and I don't want to make an interstellar incident out of this. I don't think the Seychelles Union would want to either.
Quintessence said uncertainly,
What is this Foundation business?
That's not something I can discuss with you. If Gaia is not something you can discuss with me, then we will transfer it all to the government level, and under the circumstances, it may be the worse for Seychelles.
Seychelles has kept its independence of the Federation, and I have no objection to that. I have no reason to wish Seychelles ill, and I do not wish to approach our ambassador. In fact, I will harm my own career in doing so, for I am under strict instruction to get this information without making a government matter of it.
Please tell me, then,
If there is some firm reason why you cannot discuss Gaia, will you be arrested or otherwise punished if you speak? Will you tell me plainly that I have no choice but to go to the ambassadorial height?
No, no, said Quintessence, who sounded utterly confused. I know nothing about government matters. We simply don't speak of that world.
Superstition?
Well, yes, superstition. Skies of Seychelles, in what way am I better than that foolish person who told you that Gaia was in hyperspace, or than my wife who won't even stay in a room where Gaia is mentioned, and who may even have left the house for fear it will be smashed by...
lightning?
By some stroke from afar. And I, even I, hesitate to pronounce the name. Gaia. Gaia. The syllables do not hurt. I am unharmed. Yet I hesitate. But please, believe me when I say that I honestly don't know the coordinates for Gaia's star. I can try to help you get it, if that will help. But let me tell you that we don't discuss the world here in the Union. We keep hands and minds off it. I can tell you what little is known, really known rather than supposed, and I doubt that you can learn anything more anywhere in these worlds of the Union. We know Gaia is an ancient world, and there are some who think it is the oldest world in this sector of the galaxy, but we are not certain. Patriotism tells us Seychelles planet is the oldest. Fear tells us Gaia planet is. The only way of combining the two is to suppose that Gaia is Earth, since it is known that Seychelles was settled by Earth people. Most historians think among themselves that Gaia planet was founded independently. They think it is not a colony of any world of our Union, and that the Union was not colonized by Gaia. There is no consensus on comparative age, whether Gaia was settled before or after Seychelles was.
Treves said, So far, what you know is nothing, since every possible alternative is believed by someone or other. Quintessence nodded ruefully.
It would seem so. It was comparatively late in our history that we became conscious of the existence of Gaia. We had been preoccupied at first in forming the Union, then in fighting off the Galactic Empire, then in trying to find our proper role as an imperial province and in limiting the power of the viceroys. It wasn't till the days of imperial weakness were far advanced that one of the later viceroys, who was under very weak central control by then, came to realize that Gaia existed and seemed to maintain its independence from the Seychellian province and even from the empire itself. It simply kept to itself in isolation and secrecy, so that virtually nothing was known about it, any more than is now known. The viceroy decided to take it over. We have no details what happened, but his expedition was broken, and few ships returned. In those days, of course, the ships were neither very good nor very well led. Seychelles itself rejoiced at the defeat of the viceroy, who was considered an imperial oppressor, and the debacle led almost directly to the re-establishment of our independence. The Seychelles Union snapped its ties with the Empire, and we still celebrate the anniversary of that event as Union Day. Almost out of gratitude, we left Gaia alone for nearly a century. But the time came when we were strong enough to begin to think of a little imperialistic expansion of our own. Why not take over Gaia? Why not at least establish a customs union? We sent out a fleet, and it was broken too. Thereafter, we confined ourselves to an occasional attempt at trade, attempts that were invariably unsuccessful. Gaia remained in firm isolation, and never, to anyone's knowledge, made the slightest attempt to trade or communicate with any other world. It certainly never made the slightest hostile move against anyone in any direction, and then...
Quintessence turned up the light by touching a control in the arm of his chair. In the light, Quintessence's face took on a clearly sardonic expression. He went on.
Since you are citizens of the Foundation, you perhaps remember the mule.
Treves flushed. In 5 centuries of existence, the Foundation had been conquered only once. The conquest had been only temporary and had not seriously interfered with its climb toward Second Empire. But surely no one who resented the Foundation and wished to puncture its self-satisfaction would fail to mention the mule, its one conqueror. And it was likely, thought Treves, that Quintessence had raised the level of light in order that he might see foundational self-satisfaction punctured. He said, Yes, we of the Foundation remember the mule.
The mule, said Quintessence, ruled an empire for a while, one that was as large as the Federation now controlled by the Foundation. He did not, however, rule us. He left us in peace. He passed through Seychelles at one time, however.
We signed a declaration of neutrality and a statement of friendship. He asked nothing more. We were the only ones of whom he asked nothing more in the days before illness called a halt to his expansion and forced him to wait for death. He was not an unreasonable man, you know. He did not use unreasonable force, he was not bloody, and he ruled humanely.
It was just that he was a conqueror, said Trevise sarcastically.
Like the Foundation, said Quintessetz.
Trevise, with no ready answer, said irritably, Do you have more to say about Gaia?
Just a statement that the mule made. According to the account of the historic meeting between the mule and President Kaio of the Union, the mule is described as having put his signature to the document with a flourish and to have said, You are neutral even toward Gaia by this document, which is fortunate for you. Even I will not approach Gaia.
Trevise shook his head. Why should he? Seychelles was eager to pledge neutrality, and Gaia had no record of ever troubling anyone. The mule was planning the conquest of the entire galaxy at the time, so why delay for trifles? Time enough to turn on Seychelles and Gaia when that was done.
Perhaps, said Quintessetz. But according to one witness at the time, a person we tend to believe, the mule put down his pen as he said, Even I will not approach Gaia. His voice then dropped, and in a whisper not meant to be heard, he added, Again.
Not meant to be heard, you say? Then how was it he was heard?
Because his pen rolled off the table when he put it down, and a Seychellian automatically approached and bent to pick it up. His ear was close to the mule's mouth when the word again was spoken, and he heard it. He said nothing until after the mule's death.
How can you prove it was not an invention?
The man's life is not the kind that makes it probable he would invent something of this kind. His report is accepted.
And if it is?
The mule was never in or anywhere near the Seychelles Union, except on this one occasion, at least after he appeared on the galactic scene. If he had ever been on Gaia, it had to be before he appeared on the galactic scene.
Well,
where was the mule born?
I don't think anyone knows, said Trevise.
In the Seychelles Union, there is a strong feeling he was born on Gaia.
Because of that one word?
Only partly. The mule could not be defeated because he had strange mental powers. Gaia cannot be defeated either.
Gaia has not been defeated as yet. That does not necessarily prove it cannot be.
Even the mule would not approach. Search the records of his overlordship. See if any region other than the Seychelles Union was so gingerly treated. And do you know that no one who has ever gone to Gaia for the purpose of peaceful trade has ever returned? Why do you suppose we know so little about it?
Trevise said, Your attitude seems much like superstition.
Call it what you will. Since the time of the mule, we have wiped Gaia out of our thinking. We don't want it to think of us. We only feel safe if we pretend it isn't there. It may be that the government has itself secretly initiated and encouraged the legend that Gaia has disappeared into hyperspace, in the hope that people will forget that there is a real star of that name.
You think that Gaia is a world of mules, then?
It may be. I advise you, for your good, not to go there. If you do, you will never return. If the Foundation interferes with Gaia, it will show less intelligence than the mule did. You might tell your ambassador that.
Trevise said, Get me the coordinates, and I will be off your world at once. I will reach Gaia, and I will return.
Quintessetz said, I will get you the coordinates. The astronomy department works nights, of course, and I will get it for you now if I can. But let me suggest once more that you make no attempt to reach Gaia.
Trevise said, I intend to make that attempt. And Quintessetz said heavily,
Then you intend suicide.
Chapter 14. Forward. 55. Genoff Pellerat looked out at the dim landscape in the graying dawn with an odd mixture of regret and uncertainty.
We aren't staying long enough, Golan. It seems a pleasant and interesting world. I would like to learn more about it.
Trevise looked up from the computer with a wry smile. You don't think I would like to? We had three proper meals on the planet, totally different and each excellent. I'd like more. And the only women we saw briefly, and some of them looked quite enticing for, well, for what I've got in mind. Pellerat wrinkled his nose slightly.
Oh, my dear chap, those cowbells they call shoes, and all wrapped around in clashing colors. And whatever do they do to their eyelashes? Did you notice their eyelashes?
You might just as well believe I noticed everything, Genoff. What you object to is superficial. They can easily be persuaded to wash their faces, and at the proper time, off come the shoes and the colors.
Tellarat said, I'll take your word for that, Genoff. However, I was thinking more of investigating the matter of Earth further. What we've been told about Earth thus far is so unsatisfactory, so contradictory. Radiation according to one person, robots according to another.
Death in either case.
True, said Tellarat reluctantly. But it may be that one is true and not the other, or that both are true to some extent, or that neither is true. Surely, Genoff, when you hear tales that simply shroud matters in thickening mists of doubt, surely you must feel the itch to explore, to find out.
I do, said Golan. By every dwarf star in the galaxy, I do. The problem at hand, however, is Gaia. Once that is straightened out, we can go to Earth, or come back here to Seychelles for a more extended stay. But first, Gaia.
Tellarat nodded. The problem at hand. If we accept what Quintessence told us, death is waiting for us in Gaia. Ought we to be going?
Treville said, I ask myself that.
Are you afraid?
Tellarat hesitated, as though he were probing his own feelings. Then he said, in a quite simple and matter-of-fact manner,
Yes, terribly.
Treville sat back in his chair and swiveled to face the other. He said, just as quietly and matter-of-factly, Genoff, there's no reason for you to chance this. Say the word, and I'll let you off on Seychelles with your personal belongings and with half our credits. I'll pick you up when I return, and it will be on the Sirius sector, if you wish, and Earth, if that's where it is. If I don't return, the Foundation people on Seychelles will see to it that you get back to Terminus. No hard feelings if you stay behind, old friend.
Pellaret's eyes blinked rapidly, and his lips pressed together for a few moments. Then he said, rather huskily, Old friend? We've known each other, what, a week or so? Isn't it strange that I'm going to refuse to leave the ship? I am afraid, but I want to remain with you.
Trevise moved his hands in a gesture of uncertainty. But why? I honestly don't ask it of you.
I'm not sure why, but I ask it of myself. It's... Golan, I have faith in you. It seems to me you always know what you're doing. I wanted to go to Trantor, where probably, as I now see, nothing would have happened. You insisted on Gaia, and Gaia must somehow be a raw nerve in the galaxy. Things seem to happen in connection with it. And if that's not enough, Golan, I watched you force Quintessence to give you the information about Gaia. That was such a skillful bluff. I was lost in admiration.
You have faith in me, then?
Tellarat said, Yes, I do.
Trevise put his hand on the other's upper arm and seemed for a moment to be searching for words. Finally he said,
Genoff, will you forgive me in advance if my judgment is wrong, and if you in one way or another meet with whatever unpleasant may be awaiting us?
Tellarat said,
Oh, my dear fellow, why do you ask? I make the decision freely for my reasons, not yours. And please, let us leave quickly. I don't trust my cowardice not to seize me by the throat and shame me for the rest of my life.
As you say, Genoff, said Trevise, we'll leave at the earliest moment the computer will permit. This time we'll be moving gravitically, straight up, as soon as we can be assured the atmosphere above is clear of other ships. And as the surrounding atmosphere grows less and less dense, we'll put on more and more speed. Well within the hour, we'll be in open space.
Good,
Tellarat said, and pinched the tip off a plastic coffee container. The opened orifice almost at once began steaming. Tellarat put the nipple to his mouth and sipped, allowing just enough air to enter his mouth to cool the coffee to a bearable temperature. Trevise grinned. You've learned how to use those things beautifully. You're a space veteran, Genoff.
Tellarat stared at the plastic container for a moment and said, Now that we have ships that can adjust a gravitational field at will, surely we can use ordinary containers, can't we?
Of course. But you're not going to get space people to give up their space-centered apparatus. How is a space rat going to put distance between himself and surface worms if he uses an open-mouthed cup? See those rings on the walls and ceilings? Those have been traditional in spacecraft for 20,000 years and more, but they're absolutely useless in a gravitic ship. Yet they're there, and I'll bet the entire ship to a cup of coffee that your space rat will pretend he's being squashed into asphyxiation on takeoff, and will then sway back and forth from those rings as though he's under zero grav, when it's G1, normal grav, that is, on both occasions.
You're joking.
Well, maybe a little, but there's always social inertia to everything, even technological advance. Those useless wall rings are there, and the cups they supply us have nipples. Pollerat nodded thoughtfully and continued to sip at his coffee. Finally he said, "And when do we take off?"
Trevise laughed heartily and said, "Gotcha. I began talking about wall rings, and you never noticed that we were taking off right at that time. We're a mile high right now."
"You don't mean it."
"Look out."
Pollerat did, and then said, "But I never felt a thing."
"You're not supposed to."
"Aren't we breaking the regulations? Surely we ought to have followed a radio beacon in an upward spiral, as we did in a downward spiral on landing."
"No reason to, Janov. No one will stop us. No one at all."
"Coming down, you said?"
"That was different. They weren't anxious to see us arrive, but they're ecstatic to see us go."
"Why do you say that, Golan? The only person who talked to us about Gaia was Quintessence, and he begged us not to go."
"Don't you believe it, Janov. That was for form. He made sure we'd go to Gaia. Janov, you admired the way I bluffed the information out of Quintessence. I'm sorry, but I don't deserve the admiration. If I had done nothing at all, he would have offered the information. If I had tried to plug my ears, he would have shouted it at me."
"Why do you say that, Golan? That's crazy."
"Paranoid? Yes, I know." Trevise turned to the computer and extended his sense intently. He said, "We're not being stopped. No ships in interfering distance, no warning messages of any kind." Again he swiveled in the direction of Pollerat. He said, "Tell me, Janov, how did you find out about Gaia? You knew about Gaia while we were still on Terminus. You knew it was in the Seychelles sector. You knew the name was somehow a form of Earth. Where did you hear all this?"
Pollerat seemed to stiffen. He said, "If I were back in my office on Terminus, I might consult my files. I have not brought everything with me, certainly not the dates on which I first encountered this piece of data or that."
"Well, think about it," said Trevise grimly. "Consider that the Seychellians themselves are closed-mouthed about the matter. They are so reluctant to talk about Gaia as it really is that they actually encourage a superstition that has the common people of the sector believing that no such planet exists in ordinary space. In fact, I can tell you something else. Watch this."
Trevise swung to the computer, his fingers sweeping across the direction handrests with the ease and grace of long practice. When he placed his hands on the manuals, he welcomed their warm touch and enclosure. He felt, as always, a bit of his will oozing outward. He said, "This is the computer's galactic map as it existed within its memory banks before we landed on Seychelles. I am going to show you that portion of the map that represents the night sky of Seychelles as we saw it this past night." The room darkened, and a representation of a night sky sprang out onto the screen. Pollerat said in a low voice, "As beautiful as we saw it on Seychelles."
"More beautiful," said Trevise impatiently. "There is no atmospheric interference of any kind, no clouds, no absorption at the horizon. But wait, let me make an adjustment." The view shifted steadily, giving the two the uncomfortable impression that it was they who were moving. Pollerat instinctively took hold of the arms of his chair to steady himself. "There," said Trevise. "Do you recognize that?"
"Of course. Those are the five stars, the pentagon of stars that Quintessence pointed out. It's unmistakable."
"Yes, indeed. But where is Gaia?"
Pollerat blinked. There was no dim star at the center.
"It's not there," he said.
"That's right. It's not there. And that's because its location is not included in the databanks